Listen to this statistic. 84% of executive stakeholders said they cared more about business metrics than project performance KPIs. Okay, that's not a real stat, but if you're struggling to use project KPIs to tell the story of your project's success and impact, keep listening. We're going to be breaking down how to leverage enterprise data to celebrate the success of your project and build long-lasting trust with your stakeholders and your team. Thanks for tuning in. My name is Galen Lowe with the Digital Project Manager. We are a community of digital professionals on a mission to help each other get skilled, get confident, and get connected so that we can deliver projects better. If you want to hear more about that, head over to thedigitalprojectmanager.com. Hey everyone, thanks for hanging out with us on the DPM podcast. My guest today is an agile delivery champion and one of the latest additions to the DPM experts team. He spent the last 22 years leading enterprise scale digital transformations and is a veteran at implementing agile principles for globally distributed teams. And outside of digital project management, he's a big astronaut and space buff who has seen many launches and landings live at Cape Canaveral and JSC in Houston. Today, he's going to be sharing his philosophies and strategies for using enterprise data to tell the story of a project's business impact throughout the lifecycle of that project. Not just for bragging rights, but also to keep things fun and gratifying for teams and stakeholders alike. Folks, please welcome Mr. Bill Morose. Hello, Bill.
Hey, Galen. Thank you for having me.
It's great to have you on the show. And it's also great to have you on the DPM Experts team. So I'm really happy and excited to have your expertise on tap. You and I, we're both in Toronto right now. We're enjoying a lovely state of emergency stay-at-home order. So kind of trapped inside. How's that been going for you? What's been the biggest challenge for you at this sort of stay-at-home lockdown this round?
Just keeping the place clean is a big challenge. But also just reminding myself that it can't be stuck in front of a screen 8-10 hours a day. So I actually set an alarm clock to ensure that I get up. Use my iPhone clock to alarm me every hour to get up and walk around for about 10 minutes.
That's excellent. Yeah, I've got my Fitbit to sort of remind me every now and again. Little vibrates every now and again, tells me to get up. Sometimes I do it. Sometimes I actually listen to my Fitbit.
Try to hit those 10,000 steps every day.
So. Exactly. How about silver linings? Any silver linings for you in this sort of stay-at-home lockdown?
Cooking and eating more healthier, Gil.
Nice.
So, just venturing out, pushing the envelope on different meals, with everything being locked down, restaurants, bars and such. I'm doing a lot more in-home, in-house dining. So,
the Bill Morose restaurant.
It's gonna Jay be William. Open for business.
There you go. Shea William.
And having a lot of fun doing it too.
Very cool.
Healthier eating.
I like that. Yeah. What are you looking forward to the most about being able to kind of go outside and sort of safely live a normal-ish life?
actually travel. My wife and I, Lori and I, miss the being able to travel. We have friends in Japan, in Tokyo, that we have not seen. The Zoom, the Teams is nice, but it's not the same. So being able to travel, the same thing with friends in Palm Springs that we wish we were with them, especially in this cold weather here in Toronto. So yeah, that's the biggest, downside right now. Can't wait. Fingers crossed.
It'll be nice. Soon enough. Mm-hmm. All right, let's get into it. Let's talk about how project managers and project teams can leverage enterprise data to make project work fun, gratifying, and recognized for the impact it's having on the business. So not just after a project is complete. We're talking about celebrating wins and using that data to tell that story along the way as well. But before we get into it, I thought maybe let's first talk about professional you. So what kinds of digital transformations have you led in your career?
So a lot of large-scale customer experience business transformations, taking what used to be paper, multi or omni data points into a centralized, clear line of sight end-to-end digital platform, right? Being able to have full reign and full view of all of the data points and the components in your platform to be able to then leverage that into information and to be able to take advantage of content and content display, all the while knowing the anticipated result of that.
It's funny, digital transformation. So much of this digital transformation is sort of like unraveling all the spaghetti and making sure that you know exactly what kind of noodles you've got. And then not to minimize it, but that's actually the biggest effort, trying to like get everything centralized, get that like line of sight and that centralized view on all the data and all these various data points to run the business. And I think
cleaning the data, you don't know what you got until you actually unravel it. And you end up with understanding that maybe on average, industry average, about 25% to 30% of what you have is no longer valid, and you want that cleaned up.
Totally fair. And then on an enterprise scale, I mean, we're talking about, well, a lot of data, but probably like a lot of different teams too, right? Sort of rallying everybody together across continents, trying to understand how everybody works, what data is available, whether or not it's consistent, and having these sort of project teams that are distributed around the globe, I'm imagining.
That's correct. So in one recent successful digital transformation, we took this large mobile organization in the Caribbean, across Latam, and parts of South America. So 22 different regions across the Caribbean, different languages, different currencies, different regulatory compliance issues. And an underlying network infrastructure that was different across each of the 22 regions. Bringing that together in a centralized product and services catalog, in a centralized omni-channel call center, an omni-channel platform, to be able to quickly understand offers, promotions, discounts across all of the 22 regions. So giving the senior VP, essentially the executive team, the senior VP of marketing, the senior VP of sales, the power at one stroke to have impact within what used to be weeks, now turned down to half a day, right? Of launching offers, bids across the region to not only to meet, but also to exceed competition data points.
I'm picturing this process of defragmentation almost, taking all these pieces across 22 regions, figuring out, what's different about them, what could be the same, bringing that into unity, and then just surfacing that up to the executive level so that it's something that they can execute against more rapidly, more consistently, and in sort of that region specific context as well.
And this was all integrated into Salesforce. So, not only taking the spaghetti off of the Excel sheets and the different homegrown systems, right? This is an organization that grew through acquisition. So you inherit all of this, and you inherit the surprises. And you want to bring them into the organization as one organization with a clear line of sight across the regions that account for your revenue stream.
Yeah. It's a big job, and it's a lot of data. In the conversations we've been having, I know you're someone who feels very passionately about data. And a big question for me was, okay, well, what was that moment that made you realize that data was so important to what you did? Like, what was that sort of time where you're like, dang it, I need better data to be able to tell this story of what I'm doing here?
Yeah, so a long time ago, in a valley far, far away here in Toronto, there is a CMO came up to me. I was managing the data warehouse and essentially starting a revamp of the CRM program. Heavily leveraged on data and analytics and you know, propensity and understanding the customer. CMO came up to me. I was, I think, 2 weeks into the position, into the newly created position. Asked me, so how many customers in the customer base of 4 million customers that we have? How many customers have an ARPU value of over $50? And that's a monthly, essentially a monthly combined billing factor of over $50. I was not able to answer him. it was embarrassed. It's like, yeah, and that's when the bell rang. It's like, I should know. Guess what I did? I went to find out, and you know, to my surprise, 80%. Again, I'm generalizing, but roughly about say 75 to 80% of our customers had a value of $50 or more per month. You know, that then opened, interesting, it opened campaign management for, again, understanding our customer base and understanding what do they have, first of all, and then what can we cross-sell, upsell, basically make their digital experience heightening on their customer value and their customer experience with the organization.
And you were mentioning previously when we were chatting about, you know, that kind of opened up that rabbit hole so you could then go and segment that data other ways and sort of building that mechanism to segment that data to tell the story that you need to tell and prioritize the things you need to prioritize in some of these transformation initiatives.
Correct. I mean, you got to understand your customer, right? You got to put your, I often put myself in the seat of the customer, in the what do we want? What don't we want? Right? Mm-hmm. Do we want to be do we want to be drowning in information, or do we not? Every customer, every industry is different in that way. Customer segmentation to be able to understand who the customer is and what they want will drive our technology in terms of. The data that we need to turn into information to meet their wants and their desires in terms of a heightened customer experience from start, during, and afterwards. Right? But extremely powerful.
That's the lens that I love about what you do, is that it's very data-driven but human-centered. It's always about, yes, sure, it's about revenue. Yes, it's about how the marketing and sales teams can operate more effectively. Yes, it's about call center operations. But really, it's about creating that human, relatable experience at the end and being able to sort of gather this data that measures that. So, okay, yes, we're selling more. But why are we selling more? We're selling more and we're selling faster because, you know, we've created an experience that is driving, some of the more human metrics, which we'll get to in a second.
Correct.
To have that experience so that people are happy and people are buying and people are satisfied.
So that driven, the project that drives that human experience is, I find important to, many of the project teams, program teams that I've managed are multicultural. Leveraging India, leveraging Costa Rica, Poland, here in Canada and the States as well. The understanding, why are we doing this? What is the actual business value and the importance for our program success, right? You can say, yeah, okay, well, you know, we're doing parallel sprinting in B2B and B2C. We got 8 sprints, going in parallel. We're going down the agile journey. We're on safe. Great. But how are we demonstrating value to the business? Right, sprint over sprint. Right, and so showcasing, but showcasing by the team. The team needs to understand what they're doing and why they're doing this. Why are we making a difference, right? Well, we're making a difference because we're doing offers, promotions, products and services that we're putting together to be able to understand how to mix that to generate more revenue and to provide a better breadth of those products and better breadth of those services to enhance the customer experience.
I really like that sort of use of data to describe impact, and so that the teams are seeing the forest for the trees. And I think maybe like now is probably a good opportunity to get our listeners oriented. So like we're talking about enterprise data here. So like Bill and I, we've had several conversations leading up to this, and sort of where we netted out is that, yeah, when we're talking about enterprise data, we're not necessarily talking about project metrics. We're not talking about the data that allows you to compare across projects. We're talking more about business data. So Bill, maybe you could talk to us a bit about that. Like, what do you consider to be enterprise data? What are some examples of enterprise data that you'll leverage throughout a project?
I'll reference back our recent customer in the Caribbean. What we created is 2,300 entities. So 2,300 data points for a complete product catalog and product services. Essentially, it equates to just generally about 252 products that were digitized. And as you digitize the product, you create rules, relationship rules, against pricing, against, you know, region, against infrastructure. Certain products, certain services, just because of inexistent or not, you know, let's say not yet there infrastructure cannot be offered, right? So that would you know, initiate a view to your network on where different products, different services can be offered, right? And 23.
Well, I think you mentioned something important, which was like just product availability in a certain region might be one of the metrics that you are looking at, like one of the data points that you're looking at. You might have a sprint or a series of sprints dedicated to getting some of the products that are, you know, available in a certain region that has certain infrastructure to other regions, you know, with a consistent experience, with consistent data feeding back to it. But really, like, measuring success as, hey, we weren't even able to offer this product here before, you know? Of the 25 products we're addressing, this one wasn't available in the region. We needed to put in the plumbing. We needed to build this infrastructure. And now, you know, all 25 products are available in that region. And that is a success metric.
Right, so it's understanding that once we complete, let's say, foundational sprints, to ensure that the foundational entities are in place, we can then build on those entities. And again, I'll generalize, but usually after sprint three, six weeks into the project, your foundation should be in place to then ensure that you're actually building on features that are revenue generating, right? And, you know, as we look at prioritization of sprints and prioritization of features and stories within each of the sprints, I typically like to start with the heavy hitters, right? So the big ROI features that we can then demonstrate as quick wins, right? So sprint five, you know, showcase, we are launched to market in production, being able to then demonstrate a tangible revenue increase on a product or a service that we digitized that is now in production, that is now bringing revenue back to the organization, that is now bringing maybe a higher CSAT, customer satisfaction, back to the organization, right, because of an ease of product breadth, maybe a higher speed internet service so you can watch the Super Bowl. Those are very tangible, very very measurable data points that come back to showing project success, right, or at least the road to project success as you keep moving forward.
And I think that's a really important distinction for our listeners as well, because many of us have probably been leading agile-ish projects, you know, maybe using a Scrum agile methodology or running in two-week sprints. But at the end of all the sprints, there's this sort of go-live sprint, and then everything kind of goes live. So it's incremental, and it is iterative, but it sort of culminates into this big launch. What you're talking about is genuinely using these sprints to take something out into market. So not just potentially shippable, but actually the actual product goes out, goes live at the end of sprint four. And by sprint six, you can go look at that data and go, yeah, okay, it's working. It's in market. It's enabling the business. And we can start talking about this, and we can start making decisions about this because we use an agile, you know, way of working to build something and actually push it out into the world so that we can then get data back from it.
Correct. So an iterative development with your stakeholders, with your business, to then market launch, and then create again, presuming that you have a strong analytics, backbone, in this case Salesforce or Google Analytics, to then be able to measure the return, right, and celebrate that success based on the measurable return that was created by the project team across their sprinting journey.
Yeah, and you're talking about sort of foundational sprints, right? Kind of getting up to sprint three, maybe it's a lot of plumbing. But some of that plumbing, like you mentioned, 25 products, 2,500 different data points, you have to figure out what those are. How are you going to get that data? You know, what you'll need to measure and how starts really early on in the project for you, so that as you're iterating through or releasing, chunks of a product or experiences, that you already know that you're going to be measuring it. You already know how you're going to get the data back. So by the time you've developed that part of the product, it's not even a question really about, do we have this data? That was all figured out earlier in the sprints.
It's built into the sprints as part of this. It's built into the sprint planning to ensure that it is measurable along the way.
For our listeners, just to clarify, when we're talking about enterprise data, we're talking about sort of business impact. We're not really talking about project metrics. Yes, we do need to pay attention to things like velocity. Yes, we need to keep an eye on the budget. But we're talking about what we're delivering to the business. So I think maybe just to kind of bring it back around to digital project management, as a delivery specialist, as somebody who's managing the project, why should you care about enterprise data? Is that sort of, could that be seen as beyond what a project manager needs to care about? Or do you think it's more important than that?
Well, the stakeholders, key stakeholders and executive sponsorship, right, that are essentially supporting the budget for the project, certainly want to understand the quick wins and understand the ROI that's being generated on the business case. So I would say that yes, it's extremely important in your status reporting, right? Again, if you are able to, depending on the type of project that you are managing, to be able to demonstrate the business value, ideally sprint over sprint. So there is business value in foundation, because that's your platform to build on, right? I would say more tangible is the business value in the features that are being launched to market, right? Where you can get a succinct, clear line of sight return on the project team as well, can understand that, hey, that those are features that we developed in the last two sprints ago that are now in market, that are generating revenue and coming back, right? And that is a good win to celebrate. Right, as you keep going forward in the project,
we're talking about sort of this enterprise scale, the thing that resonates with me is that it's the language that your stakeholders speak at that stage. You mentioned earlier, chief marketing officer, right? The C-suite, they want the numbers, they want the data, they want to know how it's impacting the business, and like you said to me, and have said to me, and iterated many times, every project has a business objective. So, yes, we can talk about all this qualitative stuff. And yes, we can talk about the fact that we're on schedule and sprints are going well and teams are being really efficient. But how is it actually delivering against that business objective? And data becomes that language almost.
Correct. And, the actual project tools support the organization, right, of that, of getting to that business objective. So yes, you know, certainly your burn down chart, very important. Your sprint planning, important. Your, you know, all of the, all of those, your Kanban board, important as well, right? But they are all supporters to actually showing that value that you're able to demonstrate. You know, if you show an executive a Kanban board, it'll say, okay, that's nice, it's very nice, but how where's the money?
There you go.
And, well, yeah. But it, you know, important for the project team, right? As a grounding and as an accelerator to understand where we're at with our different features.
Let's circle back on that, because I love that. And I think, you know, yes, enterprise data is going to be that really important language to speak to your stakeholders. But you were mentioning about sort of your multicultural, sort of internationally dispersed teams. And one of the things that you hang your hat on is sort of, you know, still making this sort of stuff fun. Yes, it's complex. Yes, it is high stress. Yes, it is, you know, very much the sort of everything you'd think of with a sort of enterprise-wide transformation. But, you know, how are you using this data to sort of, you know, make it fun for folks?
So, you know, I find it important for the project team to understand how we're making a difference and what the business case will yield. Right. You know, relate to that. I mean, in this case, this is mobility. So it was a mobile phone, right? And, you know, what different services and how secure your phone will become, right, with the advancement of the project as to what we are doing, right? So relate it to... well, I want to do secure banking on my iPhone. Okay, well, you know, but Sprint 6. you know, that tells a human story, right? Behind the technology that actually enables that business to be launched to market, or to be hardened to market in this case.
And I think, I mean, and, you know, maybe not all projects are like this, but, you know, one of the things you had said to me is that most of the folks on your team, they have a mobile phone, they have a bank account. This is something that they can experience, relate to, and sort of understand why it's so important that, you know, they had all worked together as a team that last sprint to uplift the customer experience, to uplift the security of the experience, and, like, what benefit that has to, like, the end user. And of course the business, but again, swinging back to that sort of human-centered digital transformation aspect of things, you know, the fact that, hey, we made somebody's life better in Sprint 6, and now it's Sprint 8, and I can tell, you know, almost quantifiably how much we made that better, and I can feel good about it. And I think the other thing that I really liked that you had mentioned in one of our previous conversations was, you know, I've kind of separated it in our dialogue, right? I'm talking about stakeholders and then I'm talking about the team. But one of the things that you brought forward was that it starts to sort of close that gap, and you kind of have this one team mentality. It's not just, you know, stakeholders and the team, but also the stakeholders are part of the team. And you're talking about these wins together and celebrating and building trust together along the way.
It's a partnership right from the start. And that partnership, that gel comes together with the wins that you're celebrating as you keep moving forward.
You were talking about your telecom project across, you know, the various regions, 22 different regions. And I thought maybe you might be able to, just without going into, you know, any sensitive specifics, maybe just paint a picture of what that project looked like in terms of, you know, you mentioned concurrent sprints, you mentioned some early sprints to sort of lay some groundwork. And then, you know, we've been talking about, okay, yes, Sprint 4 is this feature, Sprint 5 is this feature, Sprint 6 is this feature. Can you tell us a bit about sort of how you sequenced those sprints, how you would sort of prioritize based on ROI, and then also just where in the sprints you start to see the results from previous sprints and how you work that into the conversations that you have with your team?
Yeah, so a lot of that is in the sprint planning, what I call our phase zero, And that's, you know, working with the stakeholders on establishing those priorities. What are the foundational elements and getting, you know, having an understanding with the stakeholders on their buy-in that the foundational elements need to be in place to be able to build on, right? Things just don't happen magically in Agile, right? There's actually a lot more work in that, because there's many unknowns as you start an Agile project. your requirements aren't necessarily very, very well known, let's say, but you start with your user stories, right? And with that, you build that program. So getting that buy-in in sprint planning, understanding, so after foundation, right, what are the heavy hitters from an ROI? What is, what do we understand? What is maybe less complex? Or you want to start with the more complex aspects, right? But that buy-in with your stakeholders is important in terms of managing those expectations, right? This is what we see again being able to launch to market with the digitized product and services catalog, in this case integrated to Salesforce. So what are we looking at the end goal? From a numbers perspective, there were 152 sales engineers that used Salesforce. So this is across 22 regions, right? In three languages, English, French, and Spanish, because the Caribbean is a three language region. And then looking at managing that, those expectations as to where we expect to be, where the business expects to be, with the new features that are being launched, to market. In that, to a certain point, revenue forecasts, but again, against the business case that the business has put together, those revenue forecasts against, each of the sprints or the features that are being launched to market, right? So in parallel streams, in this case, the B2C and the B2B were, let's say, equally important, okay, for different reasons, business to business, business to consumer. A lot of the consumers obviously are in the business. That customer experience across those two streams was a very high priority, which is why we did both of those in parallel with two different teams working in parallel to be able to get this done within 14 months, successfully.
And then, I mean, one of the things that I was thinking of when I was picturing this is that, and when I was picturing sort of past Agile projects that I've been involved in, is it sometimes the case that, yes, sprint 1, 2, and 3 might be even a bit underwhelming for stakeholders because you're like doing this plumbing and infrastructure and your quick wins are, we have pipes now, right? Instead of shiny objects. And then do you find, do you find that's the case? And then B, do you find that arcs, that people get more excited about the output after you get past some of those foundational sprints and are actually releasing things into market and, data is being fed back?
Very much so, because that's, at least in my opinion, or what I've seen, is that's when the teams can relate to the work that's being delivered.
I like that. I really like that.
And that relationship, again, propels the teams to keep moving forward. It's also for those teams that are new to Agile, your first couple of sprints, if you're not an Agile veteran, or you have a number of Agile projects experience. Those first couple of sprints sort of lay the groundwork for that knowledge, understanding that okay, well, so this is how it's done, right? This is what it's about, and getting that grounding to move forward. So that there's less, I think I use the word stumbling and bumbling. You crawl, right? Then you walk, and then you run. So the first couple of sprints, the team is crawling along. Sprint three, and I'm expecting, hey, we should be in a position to be able to start walking, right? And then beyond sprint maybe four, we could look at running, and then even going into marathons, right? And bringing in the velocity into the fold, and understanding that the team is doing the right things in the right way to be able to meet the objective. Understanding that, stand up, classic, right? Stand up is not a progress meeting, right? We look at it very quickly. Within 10 minutes, I'm expecting to understand where you at, what you need, and where you're going, and then what wasn't done, so that we can address that. Where you blocked, what do you need to remove the blocker, and everybody keep moving forward, right? It's not status. Don't talk to me about status. Don't talk to me about solutioning. Talk to me about what have you done? What do you still need to do? And then where are you blocked so you can keep moving forward?
Yeah. And what are, you're following kind of a Scrum Agile methodology, and I find in most of the projects you and I have talked about. What are some of the ceremonies where you would surface that data of, hey, here's the impact we're having. Here's what the dashboard says in Salesforce. Like, let's give ourselves a pat on the back.
So the retrospective, after every sprint, we would do a retrospective with the team. We'd also include the business stakeholders in the retrospective. Again, as part of that partnership, understanding that a retrospective is, let's look at what went well. And what went well, being able to measure revenue, right? That's going well. Or what didn't go well in that, and what didn't go well to assure that that that's put together as an action plan to then be able to with an assignment on who's going to take that action plan forward, to then fold that into the upcoming sprints.
And actually, I think you answered my next question, which I was going to lob at you, which was, what happens when we're talking about sort of building trust, right? We're talking about accelerating and getting better. It starts slow, but then after sprint three, we start seeing results, and it's really exciting. What about when the data doesn't tell you the thing that you wanted it to? Like, for example, the needle's actually moving the wrong way as you measure. You're in sprint six, and the thing you did in sprint four actually increased, the time it took for one of the sales engineers to make a sale. What do you do then?
Well, then we're able to pivot, right, on understanding that something resulted in an unexpected data point, or below acceptance data point. We're then able to pivot on that in upcoming sprints, or in backlog, to assure that comes back to where we expected it to be.
Yeah, reprioritize.
Again, the reprioritize agile, back into the pivoting, backlog. Right? We start with not knowing or not completely knowing whether we will be completely successful. But if we're measuring it in increments, right, we're able to pivot, to reorientate, to ensure that we continue down a successful path.
That makes sense. And actually, that ties in perfectly to my next question, which was, you know, is it Agile that enables this? Could you do the same thing with a waterfall style project in terms of using enterprise data to tell a story, but then also like measure and pivot along the way?
I think that we all know the answer to that question, Ewan. Waterfall and hybrid, I mean, yes. However, you know, it would not enable pivoting to the point of, you know, against your 2-week sprints. So you might be out, you know, against the timeline to not be able to pivot in time to recover in your project. Again, you know, waterfall project is quite rigid. It's based on requirements being confirmed. It's based on, you know, development and testing against a not necessarily a, you know, real life timeline as life goes on. Particularly for, you know, industries like the high technology, the mobile, the retail consumer, where, you know, the expectation changes, you know, I'm not going to say daily, but it could, but the expectation does change weekly. With this organization down in the Caribbean across 22 regions, offers, promotions, discounting was extremely high priority because the industry, the mobile phone industry in the Caribbean, in Central South America, changes daily. You literally have people doing DX based on you know, a free pizza promotion coupon. All right, I'm using a very very rudimentary example, but yeah, I think you get the picture. It's that fine, right? And when you have a competitor that suddenly is giving you a free pizza for, you know, activating a cell phone, it's pretty cutthroat, and you got to be able to react to that. And I have been in cases where we have lost a significant percentage of our subscribers based on those types of promotions, those types of offers. And then, you know, they eventually do come back, right? But that churn is very stressful and expensive. Yeah, it's very expensive.
I think that that's a really good point in the sense that, you know, there are a lot of enterprise organizations still, you know, wondering whether or not they can be agile or whether they should do agile. And I know that even in conversations I have, and I fall into this trap myself, which is like, you know, the reasons to do agile. So especially, you know, I come from an agency background. A lot of the time it's like, just make sure that we're building the right thing for the client. So that way every 2 weeks we can check in and get feedback and make sure, you know, our sponsor, our client thinks it's right. Whereas actually the bigger picture is, you know, making sure that at any given point you're still building the right thing because the market is moving fast and you have to pay attention to the market and what you're building. It's not necessarily just managing expectations of clients and sponsors. It's making sure that what you're building is actually going to do the thing it's supposed to do when you actually take it out into the field.
Yep. And, you know, I've had that experience. Again, it's about, you know, life keeps moving forward, right? Things go on. I've had the experience in a waterfall project where we built something to market. The market that we were building against was a year and a half old. So when we went to release it to market, we were a year and a half behind where the competition or certain competitions were.
Ladies and gentlemen, color television. Everyone's like,
yeah. So how do you account for that? I mean, you know, even trying to pivot, and we did try to pivot many times. There was just too much what I call project stress on on pivoting because the foundational elements were already built against, right. You know, a a 14-month stale requirements document.
There you go. There you go. Good lesson.
Don't want to be in that quadrant again. Those are lessons learned that you don't want to go back to.
I mean, and while we're talking about challenges, I mean, even Agile and the sort of notion of data-driven storytelling throughout your project, I'm sure, are fraught with challenges. One of the things you and I
it's
were talking
easy,
about
you know,
was...
It is not easy.
What, don't you just plug it all into Salesforce and just like, boom, it's all done for you? No, I imagine it's like a heavy lift. One of the things we were talking about was even just data literacy of teams and stakeholders. So in other words, people have to get it. It's not just gathering 2,500 data points and tossing them at people and hoping that's going to, you know, get everyone to believe in your project and celebrate it and build trust. So, I mean, what are some of the times, have you encountered a scenario where maybe some of the stakeholders or your team just don't really get the data? And how do you help them kind of wrap their heads around it?
So, you know, we all know that data is extremely important, very powerful, right? The ensuring that you have clean data is firstly a critical point. Then being able to understand what data you have, the transparency of the data in terms of it being understood, the retrievability of the data. Great to say I have it, but if I can't get to it, it's a little bit of a no starter. And then, okay, so I got clean data. I can get to it. I understand it. Now, how do I use it? And that's where the rubber needs to hit the road, right? It's to understand the power of the data that you have, but then how to use it in the way that would meet what you're expecting to get out of the data, right? So having that plan in place, understanding how to manage the data is I would say a big gap from actually having the data. So a lot of that is I'll say teaching, coaching, even C-level across the organization on what they have, on what it can be used for, and on then how to understand, how to interpret the results that they're getting from that data based on the different algorithm formulas that we're putting together to source out of the warehouse.
And one thing that I really like that you mentioned to me was sort of that, again, circling back to making it human, making it relatable. You know, what does all this data mean? Doing the actual storytelling, that's the storytelling aspect of it, is, okay, well, we can take this data. Like, for example, you had given me the example of, like, peak network hours,
yes,
for example. Like, okay, that's great. I see all these peaks and valleys, Bill, but I don't know, like, how does that help us plan our business? But, you know, how do you kind of weave that into a story that, you know, folks can understand if they're struggling with the data?
So in this case, it was actually based on infrastructure investment. And should we invest in infrastructure because of different data peaks that we were seeing in the network, right? And then how much should we invest and when should we invest to basically flatten those peaks? Right? So taking, in this case, user data, not revenue data, but user data on usage across the network, across it's a 24-hour period. Right. And the example is here in Canada, typically early in the morning, so say 6:30 to about 9:30, there is a peak of usage. So you would need to ensure that your infrastructure is robust to support that peak and continue with customer experience in terms of limited degradation and ensuring that you're providing a seamless continuous customer experience through your network usage peaks, as well as through your network lows as well. Do you want to be investing in providing full coverage, right, when you know that only maybe 30% of your subscribers are using the network at that time? Does, again, critical decisions. And I'll say that as we were Canadians down in Latin America, usage peaks are different, right? Again, it's listening to the stakeholders, it's listening to the customers based on their experience. A lot of the culture in Latin South America is based on afternoon siestas. Right? So your peaks are no longer at the end of the day; they're now maybe at about 3 o'clock, maybe about 11:30. Right? So that's you have to fold in the culture to that as well.
I like that. That's sort of like, yeah, regional aspect of things. And then also, I mean, in this day and age, also reallocating certain resources of the company to sort of focus on those peaks and deliver service when you're sort of in front of the customer. And where there's these valleys, maybe that's where you're pulling from in order to sort of make the right investments for other peak hours elsewhere in other regions.
So in this case, the data actually supported a business case, which led to a multi-million dollar infrastructure upgrade.
And I mean, all centering around this notion of like not dropping a call, for example, like to really humanize that data. We're like, look at this peak. It's stressing the system out. It's when you're facing most of your customers in this region. This is when they're going to judge you. So let's invest here, because as soon as you drop that call, that could be a deactivation right there. And that's like, and that's a story that anybody in the business will understand.
Especially if that call was with my mom.
I'm calling retention. one thing I wanted to circle back on, I made a joke about it earlier, just this, the tools question, right? Okay, you've got all this data, you've done your foundational sprints, you've decided this is the data we need to measure, we figured out how to retrieve that data, integrate with the systems that are feeding this data, and then how do we then sort of surface it? And you mentioned it's all, going into Salesforce. And then...
Or Dynamics, yep.
There you go, or Dynamics. Like, yeah, bring... There you go. There's that value of the enterprise CRM. If anybody listening was not sure why CRM was such a big deal to enterprise organizations, this is why. And then once it's in there, how do you sort of put it in front of stakeholders? How do you put it in front of stakeholders in your team so that they can see it and react to it?
Your analytics of modules, right? As you configure your analytics modules to your stakeholder requirements, should expose that data to their expectations. Right? So dashboards are, I know that the dashboards are, extremely, let's say extremely popular, right? It's a good buzzword. But you want to make sure that you have maybe an Uber dashboards for what do you really want to see, right? And what do you really want to measure? And then based on the information that you're gleaning from your dashboard, right? What decisions and decision points, is that taking you to? So it's nice to have, a dashboard that's telling you everything, because I want to know everything. But what am I going to do with everything? Maybe I don't need to know everything at the same time. Maybe I need, need to understand four or five critical areas that we need to measure. And those four or five critical areas that we need to measure might be a combination of compliance, right, in the finance and the banking industry, extremely important to be compliant. Otherwise, your charter might be at risk of being pulled. Another quadrant you don't want to be in. And then what to do with the information that you are getting, right? What are the actions? Which might mean support on investment to shore up some of those indicators that you're getting,
mm-hmm.
or acceptance.
Yeah, I like that. It's like
Let's just accept
here's
it.
Some, you know, it's like the, or just accept it. But yeah, coming back to that pivot, right? Like you see smoke and you're like, hey, we need to focus some energy there, you know, and that's also a good conversation in terms of actual, you know, financial investment in the project itself is like, okay, look what we discovered in our dashboard. This needs attention. We need to prioritize this. Actually, we need a bit more money for this and resources and time to focus on this. And that's what's supporting, you know, a change in scope or a change in priorities or a pivot in your project.
Well, it, you know, it exposes risk, right? These are areas that are at risk, and we mitigate that risk. We mitigate that risk with an action plan or a mitigation plan, right? And we communicate that risk across the organization. And, you know, then there's an acceptance of either the mitigation plan against the risk or a an acceptance of a priority to close on that issue against the risk.
And then I wanted to return to something because you made a really good point about data transparency. Which is that, okay, yes, part of the project scope is building these dashboards, but it's not like this handoff that's like, okay, we'll hand it over to the business and we never see it again. The dashboard that your team built actually becomes their dashboard for looking at the data sprint over sprint. So like, for example, and correct me if I'm, you know, I'm putting words in your mouth here, but like, you bring up the Salesforce dashboard, the one that you're delivering to the client, that's the one that the team is looking at as well, going, hey, look at that needle moving. You know, looks like CSAT is up, you know, compared to, you know, what we had before Sprint 4. Like, that's really exciting. And just having that data and then, again, integrating that experience so that stakeholders and team members kind of care about the same things as a result, right? Yeah. Like, success is actually shared because everyone's looking at it together, understanding that data, understanding, you know, what's being measured and what that means for the project in terms of like, okay, well, maybe we should pivot because that looks like a risk.
Correct.
And sort of being all on the same page together.
And, you know, and you're able to quantify why we should pivot, right? Or quantify the pivot, in fact. So, it, I mean, with that is, you know, the importance of a transition and a transition plan, right? And, you know, once you create it, great, but now you know, we need a process lifecycle management element into this to continue to assure that you know, that there is a supported process and that there's an evolution and a management of what has been created and launched.
Mm-hmm. That data. No, I really like that. That's very cool.
It's not just a one shot. It's a one shot with support, right? Because it's constantly evolving, constantly. Again, the power of data is extreme, mm-hmm. or can be, depending on how you know how to use it.
And speaking of that, have you ever worked with any organizations? You don't have to name names, but have you worked with any organizations that didn't want you to expose that data back to the team?
No, I have not had the, I've not, most of the organizations that I work with, are transparent. There are elements that, are masked. Okay. The masked elements are exposed to the team, but, you know, an example of that is credit card numbers. Those are masked. It could be, you know, healthcare information that could be maybe masked as well, but the elements are exposed in a masked fashion to our teams.
But no scenarios where it's like, no, I don't want your team to know what our CSAT or NPS score is right now.
No, I have not worked with organizations that that are like that.
That's promising because, you know, like, data fluency is going to be so important to some of these organizations. If you can't trust the teams to sort of interpret and digest that data to make a better product, then you're probably missing the boat on how valuable this data
can
be.
I think there might be a bigger question to that agenda. I wouldn't, based on my character, personality, and the experience, I probably would have difficulty actually working that type of a project or that type of a program. And if you can't see why you're making a difference, I would find that, I mean, personally, I would find that limiting.
And I think that's maybe a good tie-in into just like humanizing the data, right? Sort of understanding the impact that folks are having on the world around them, whether it's the customer or whether it's, frontline employees. We talked a lot about things like, revenue or, length of call or, peak usage and some operational stuff. And we talked about customer segmentation, but, how do you use data to sort of paint a picture of how you're making a quantifiable difference in people's lives, the feel-good data?
Again, very good question, Galen. I think the feel-good data would maybe come from an element of social media. I've tried looking at this. It becomes very artsy in terms of, trying to get a tangible picture from social media elements or social media data elements because of the different influencers. And I'll use the recent GameStop experience, where that might not necessarily be giving you the right indicator to what you're looking to do. But again, if you do take a number of maybe data points from social media, Facebook, Pinterest, all of the guys out there, Twitter, you might Instagram, you might be able to maybe create a trending or some sort of propensity. But it would be, again, I wouldn't hang my hat on that being a measurable. We're going the right way, but, again, with too many influencing elements that might sway that data, I wouldn't find it to be the only source. So what I would look at is supporting that or adding on other data elements, data points. Just even going out and calling some of our high value subscribers. We're asking them, or we're doing focus groups, or reaching out through other channels on supporting that on supporting that information that we're looking to get. So not just relying on social media, but having an omni-channel approach.
And I think it's a good point that maybe some of the human side of data isn't always quantifiable. Sometimes it is qualitative data. And I like that. I like the notion of like sentiment on social media. Yes, it's not the only data point you're going to pay attention to. It's like, oh, look, somebody complained about, their service. We must have failed at our project. But just getting a sense, are there sort of positive tweets, out there as well? Is it arcing the right direction? And then something you mentioned to me previously is like also just that feeling. And it might not be measurable, but that feeling internally for the project, right? Like, are people wanting to talk about the project or get involved with your project? Are teams excited to work on it? Or is everyone kind of not showing up for meetings and, your stand-up is just you and one other person who forgot to skip it? is it having an impact? And if it's having an impact, people are probably going to want to be involved. People are probably going to want to talk about it. So even though that's a very sort of vague qualitative gut feeling, it's still part of the picture of what kind of impact your project is having.
Well, the importance of having the executive sponsorship, right? That executive sponsorship, certainly launches the project and creates that support. But then the project itself, we need to demonstrate the credibility, demonstrate the confidence of that we're going in the right direction, right? And that creates that propels it creates a rhythm, I would say, and it propels the team to continue working together, again, continue moving forward, right, with understanding the difference that they're making.
Absolutely.
And having fun as well.
Exactly.
It's not just work, it's also fun. you have to enjoy the day over day.
Mm-hmm. Celebrate the wins.
Celebrate the quick wins incrementally.
Love it.
And then certainly as the project is accepted, as it is closed, as it is delivered, as it is closed, there is an importance for to celebrate that milestone as well.
Bill, these insights are all super valuable. The one concept that I think really stood out for me that changed the way I think about this is just that notion, combining that theory of, one team, bringing stakeholders and team members together. I think a lot of us talk about that sort of one team mentality, but then using that and looking at the same data, I think that's a game changer for me. You know, we always kind of are trained to think as project managers, okay, our sprint retro is about, did we close out as many story points as we thought we were going to close out? What's our velocity? But it's also about, hey, are we moving the needle? Are we hitting our business objectives? And just understanding that a project team can also interpret and ingest that information, is mature enough to look at those business metrics and make decisions about the project based on that, not just velocity and not just, are we on schedule, but are we doing the thing that we said we would do? I think that's huge. I'm just wondering, I'm going to end out with a loaded question. My loaded question is this: what is your best advice for someone who is looking to leverage enterprise data and make things fun and rewarding for their teams and their stakeholders? Where do they start?
Just assuring that executive sponsorship is in place.
Thanks again so much for joining us on the show. I think our listeners will learn a lot from you. Hoping to have you back sometime soon. And again, welcome to the DPM Experts team.
Thank you very much, Gail. It's been a blast. Thank you. Cheers and keep safe.
It's been a lot of fun. Will do.